Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, can Islam and democracy coexist?
Since the start of the Arab uprisings, the discussion of whether or not Islam accommodates the concept of democracy has been further reiterated throughout the media. Other recent events have also forced the world to pose this question. The Saudis' ban on women's driving and restrictions in employment, as well as its ban on protesting, breaches the core concept of an ideal democracy. The uproar in response to the anti-Islam film, which in some cases turned violent, has likewise questioned the idea of freedom of expression and whether Islam can handle this form of democracy. But while the world focuses on these issues, it continues to ignore the democratically elected governments of Iran and Hamas in Palestine, as well as Egypt's post-war elections. With controversial issues such as women's rights, education, social justice, and freedom now back in the spotlight, this week's Islam and Life asks, can Islam and democracy coexist?
This is an important question once again, because we have heard some political experts, some politicians sometimes, repeating the fact that the Muslim majority countries are in majority Muslims. It's not possible for them to experience democracy. We have seen the awakening in the Arab world in MENA with thousands and millions of people, citizens demonstrating and ready for democracy. They want freedom, they want dignity, they don't want dictators. So there is something which is happening in MENA and the Middle East in Muslim majority countries. And at the same time, when democracy is working, it's as if in the West we are not ready. And as the personal advisor to the Turkish Prime Minister put it once, he was saying, the question is not if Muslims are ready for democracy. The question is the West ready for democracy in the Middle East, which is maybe the right question. So what could be the hindrances when it comes to the Islamic reference, in which way we can deal with the democratic values, and what could be the way forward as to democratization in the region and in the Muslim majority countries as a whole? And to answer all these questions, I'm joined by Amir De Martino, lecturer in Islamic studies. Thank you so much for being with us today. Let me start with this first question, which is the overall question, which has to do with Islam and democracy. Do you see a problem? Because in fact, even some political groups and Islamists in the beginning of the 20th century, they were very reluctant in using the concept of democracy. Yes. They were saying, no, it's not our concept, it's coming from the West, up to the elections in Algeria, where some of the leaders were saying democracy is not in the Quran. Yes. So now if we come to the principles, the democratic principles, is there a problem from an Islamic viewpoint?
Well, from an Islamic viewpoint, I don't think there is a problem. And obviously, we have to look always for principles. And of course, the principles then, once they are identified, then you extrapolate your working project. In this case, democracy, it would be a working project. Are there principles in Islam and in the Quran which indicates that the process of participation, consultation between the rulers and the subject is there? Well, historically, yes, certainly that. And if you want to go back to the creation of the first state of Medina, the time of the Prophet, then even there we see an embryonic beginning of a process of consultation. The Prophet established relationship with various groups, not only Muslim, but also non-Muslim, the Jews of Medina, and other groups which don't accept the Prophet as a prophet, they accepted him as a leader. And so therefore the Prophet cannot just negotiate on Islamic terms, but he negotiated on a more human sort of political terms and what is called the social contract nowadays. He established contracts with various groups, and so a kind of participation and agreement on how the community must interact with each other. And I think the blueprint of the Prophet certainly gives an indication that yes, that there is certainly an element where everybody is called to cooperate with the central government and to establish.
Yes. So what you are saying is that when we come back to two things, first, the scriptural sources, the Quran and Sunnah, and the prophetic experience, yes. The way he was dealing with the first society and the first state that was set in Medina, yes. Nothing is against the Islamic, the democratic principles.
No, not, yes.
So this is one thing. Now, we, you know, some would argue and say, no, there are differences. So the general principles are there when we talk about the rule of law, equal citizenship, and, yes. And some of the principles. Now, how would you explain that in the great majority of the Muslim majority countries now, there is no democracy? Why is it? So some are explaining this by saying, you know what? Yeah. Because they are Muslims. So yeah. Muslims are not buying the concept of democracy. It's that they are essentializing lack of democracy in the name of Islam. What would be your answer?
I mean, any study of politics, I'm not a political expert, but certainly from the historical point of view, democracy is not something which developed overnight. And yes, you can refer to the Greek element of democracy, but those are primitive democracies, and I don't think anybody would aspire to that, those kind of democracy, which are not much different to any, in a sense, sort of dictatorial oligarchy that exists. So it has been an historical process, very long process, and it is it's not old. The West has reached whatever level of democracy they've reached with a lot of suffering, with a lot of difficulties. And even nowadays, democracies are different in styles. You know, it's a very loose word, democracy. There's liberal democracy, there's constitutional democracy, there's monarchy with democratic things like you have in England. So it is a process. The problem is there the principle within the Islamic teaching to arrive at a democratic process? And then this is, yes, the rest is all evolutions. And the evolution is to do with the maturity of a community, maturity of individuals.
But if I listen to you, it would say, why, for example, the great majority of the Muslim majority countries are not democratic? Is this that because they are backward? Is this because they are in history far behind what is happening in the West? Well, what is the main problem?
The problem, I think, primarily is, of course, in the problems of interpretation. And I think in countries where, for example, what we call the ability to reinterpret the text have been closed, well, ijtihad is fundamental. Mm. Because in a sense, what ijtihad does, and the ability to reinterpret the plays according to time and place, gives you the possibility of discuss. And the democratic process is a process in which discussion takes place. If you close the door of interpretation, and it has happened in the Islamic world, unfortunately, over the past, then you eliminate this ability of discussion, ijtihad. And so the process becomes stagnant. Hmm. The moment you...
So which is happening now?
Yes, it has been happening over the last few centuries where the gates of ijtihad are defined as closed. And of course, only in fact, we'll see those countries, those nations, those schools of thoughts who have kept it open have been more able to experiment with new models, which are very, in a sense, closer to a democratic process. When we think democratic, we are talking about people participation in the ruling. This is the crash. And then all the other elements which are identified with democracy, like the rule of redressing of wrong, accountability, and all these elections, participation.
So how would you explain, for example, if we look at what is happening in in the Muslim majority countries, and it's not only the Arab countries.
Yes.
It's in Indonesia, in Malaysia,
yes.
there are processes, democratic processes. If we come to what happened recently in the Muslim, in the Middle East,
yes.
with you know this awakening and people in Tunisia, in Egypt, in Yemen, now in you have it in Syria. We have this, you know, something is happening, and at the same time. We see that it happened in Palestine with Hamas, it happened in Iran, as it was said, that we have a democratic process.
Yes.
And it's as if in other countries there is nothing. You know, we were mentioning Saudi Arabia and the petromonarchies, there are no democratic processes. How can we explain this? Is there a religious factor or it's political and historical factors?
Well, certainly historical is there, and of course it's a lot to do with society, and Arab society is known for being a tribal society at its roots, and so it is much difficult to break from tribalism, and especially I know we're talking about in terms of population, local population, which still adhere to tribal society. Iraq, for example, a classical example of a very of a society, of a nation split into tribal system. And to break loose of this, it becomes much more difficult. And this is why in nations like for example Iran, that tribalism has, you know, as a process of tribalism has been diluted over the century, it has much more it has been easy to establish institutions.
Democratic institution
of, and so this obviously plays a lot, but that doesn't mean that it's not possible. It takes a little bit longer, and certainly the Islamic scholars have a huge role to play in terms of reinterpreting, being able to reinterpret, you know, the law according to the time and place, but. There is other things, and I don't want to cry conspiracy theory, but certainly Western hegemony has contributed to pushing a certain agenda in certain Muslim countries where rulers have been established and maintained over a long period.
Which happened for decades.
Yes, for decades, and sort of stopping the process of reforms. And this is, as you said, the Turkish is quite ready to say that is the West ready for democracy in the Arab world in reality, because you know there are interests which are playing here, and so therefore, but principally I don't believe that is not possible, and I can see that there are certainly good movement in the Middle East, and there are examples of nations. Certainly, for example, the constitutional movement in Iran is an indication that this can be replicated, copied elsewhere, somewhere. Because obviously, we are talking about culturally two different human expressions: the West and the Arab, the Muslim world in general, do have two different conceptions of life. The life where it includes still a religious dimension, and a life which has put religion aside completely from public
which
life.
Which is the two different things.
The two different.
What would you say as someone who is looking at what is happening, and you're now everywhere in the world, we are celebrating democracies, even though, in fact, some of the people, for example, you know, even the Palestinians now are paying the price for voting for Hamas. It's as if they chose the wrong people to vote for. So they elect them and they were punished, and they are still punished for this, which could have been a trap in the whole process. Should we push the agenda of democracy in, because the one who said this in 2003 was George W. Bush. He said in 2003, democracy should come to the Middle East.
Yeah.
Is this what the Muslims should promote in the Middle East?
We see certainly that democracy as a general concept. Of course, we have to go into the specific of what type of democracy fits with any specific region according to their cultural background. But as a principle, if you want to say that democracy it's a concept which wants to see public participation in the process of governance, then yes, certainly we should push it, and this is our things. And perhaps our agenda should be also to explain that democracy is not a closed chapter, and there are democracies, informations, and we can establish a democratic system within an Islamic framework.
So it's a process.
Yes, it's a process.
Much more than a study.
And in fact, we might theorize a system, and there are people who are already working on it, a system which might be even better than a system which is developed in Western countries, where the removal of faith from the political process has in a sense created a vacuum.
I will come to a question about this because we can be quite critical about the evolution of democracies in the West. But before this, you know, once I was in Japan and we had a discussion between an Ayatollah coming from Iran and Fukuyama. And the Ayatollah was saying, we are for democracy, but we advocate Islamic democracy. And Fukuyama responded by saying, I'm sorry, democracy should not be qualified. It's democratic or it's not. You cannot just put a name or qualification to democracy. By saying this, it's as if you are trying to change the principle of democracy. What would be your take on that?
Well, it is a bit, coming from Fukuyama, it's a little bit strange that that he fails to understand that democracy is not a monolithic system, and there cannot possibly be just what he thinks it is. And as I said, there are democracies has been a process of evolution. If you want to start from the Greek and up to the present time, the whole system has evoluted.
So would you say there is something called an Islamic democracy?
Yeah, there are liberal democracies. As I said, there are monarchical democracies.
But what would be the difference between a liberal democracy and an Islamic democracy?
This is the ethos of an Islamic democracy. Primarily, Islam has two major elements. The ethical aspect of it, which you can implement it, the ethical teaching can be implemented regardless of having a coercive power. You don't need, especially for minority living in the West, you live your life according from an ethical system. But Islam also advocates a political system. And so this political system then has elements which are, what is the objective? The objective is to look at the individual again, not only what is the good, what is the good life for an individual.
So you would say the ethical dimension is what makes it Islamic?
The ethical dimension which sees the certainly the individual, what makes a good life for an individual.
Based on the Islamic principle.
Yes. In the West you can say that whatever makes you happy and whatever fulfills your material desire, but of course in an Islamic it is a little bit extra than that.
Yes.
The individual, the evolution of the individual, the spiritual evolution of the individual is also the concern of a government. And in doing so, it has to formulate policies, structures, policies which are in line with the...
But you wouldn't say it's less freedom?
It shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be. In theory, there is no reason because, as I said, Islamic law. If you want to talk from Islamic point of view, then you of course, the process of ijtihad means that you have scholars, you have debate, and in a democratic Islamic ideal society, you would have this scholar debating of the actuality of certain laws, of certain rulings. So there is not a fixed process. Democracy is against giving you a package and this is it. It wants the basic principle that you discuss the ability. And
that
I think we have plenty of discussion which can happen in an Islamic sort of government.
Okay, so let me come to what you said before. You were saying we can even find a better model of governance. Now if we look at what is happening throughout the West, many citizens are complaining, saying, look, what yesterday was perceived as a democratic model where we have a voice, where we have a civil society, which is an active civil society, now we are losing our rights. Multi or transnational corporations are taking over, so there is no religion taking over a state, but there are economic institutions that are directing everything which is decided by the state. We have technocrats now that are running the country, which we didn't choose before. So democracies are in crisis, and yet still all the people are celebrating democracy. Is this the way forward?
Well, certainly, as I said, the chapter of democracy is not a closed chapter. Mm. And we have things that now they've got the blueprint for the ideal democracy has to rethink, and political theories that have to analyze. And from an Islamic point of view, I just think we should be able to offer a little bit something a little extra, and especially in the way of the interaction between economy and but democracy and economic. And as you said, you know, the power of multinational seems to be extended everywhere, mm. and very difficult to control. You know, voices are silenced, government politicians are silenced by great multinational. And so, you know, this is something that perhaps you know, we could contribute in curbing that with a new theorizing the possibility of an economic system which is fairer, juster, and with that a more transparent democracy. As I said, you know, it's an illusion to think that we are living in an ideal democracy. And so there are a lot of contradictions, and the way that the democracies are willingly and readily implemented at home by government, and then when it's about going about business around the world, the same democratic yes. government, they use different measurements. So something here is wrong. And I think people in general, there is a movement towards awareness. I think the demonstration, for example, the basic case of demonstrations for Palestine recently outside Israeli embassies, which see more and more Western participation, is an indication that, or even the Occupy Wall Street movement, yeah. there is an indication that public opinion is sort of coming back to the street.
We can add to this that not only there are the economic forces, but there is also the populists. Yes. And populists is emotional politics. Politics is very much against the democratic yes. processes yes. because it's not based on you with your choice. It's yes. to drive the people to exactly. vote, you know, out of fear and out of rejection, which yes. is xenophobia. It's yes, something which is...
sensationalizing fear.
Exactly, and which is what is happening yes, now. So what you are saying is not only we have to nurture democracy, but we should think about promoting and shaping a new model of democracy based on the principles and the ethical ground that we have as Muslims.
Sure, yes, because not all of our ethical grounds are related to the Sharia. A lot of those ethical grounds are based on universal principles which can be recognized universally. And so there's a lot of things we can sort of add to it. And so this is the way forward, I think.
Thank you so much. I think that this discussion, it's important because we start with the theoretical framework mm-hmm. showing and repeating once again that Islam and the Islamic principles are not against the democratic principles. Mm-hmm. Now it's very important to deconstruct the whole thing, to get the right principles, and to get something that you have been repeating, is that democracy is a process, is not a static structure, and the principles are there, but the way they are implemented can move with history. It's not an achieved process. And when we talk about what is happening in the Muslim majority countries, we see people asking for freedom and dignity, and some of the countries that are very, very cautious with the process, sometimes using the scholars to avoid promoting freedom mm. and political kind of liberation. These are things that are not representing Islam, but yeah. political and historical reasons that we have to take into account. And the last point that you were making is that Muslims with others in the West could be part of a process where they are proposing an alternative as a model with the democratic principles, but new models. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen. And here is the way to contact us.
Islam and Life welcomes your opinion. So please send us your suggestions as well as criticism on any of the shows you have seen or you would like to see. You can do all this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also be part of our online platform by joining our Facebook page, Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can share your thoughts with other Islam and Life fans, engage with debate, and view past shows.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Amir De Martino. Thank you so much for being with us today. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.